Well, Jesse, that's the way you want to end a losing streak. Big time catches from Varsho, Springer, great catch from Springer. Your highest leverage relievers coming through in the end. Kirk looking a lot better, and you got exactly what you needed from Kevin Gausman, which is a chance to win. Five-game losing streak. The Dodgers are in town. A sweep on the table. And your ace, who's had a funky start to the year, an abbreviated spring, he comes out and he shoves. Seven innings of one-run ball will always give you terrific chance to win. Yeah, great that it comes from the ace, Kevin Gausman. Yes, there are questions about the offense that have yet to be answered, but a great win. 3-1 for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, just an excellent performance from Kevin Gausman in this game. Five strikeouts, seven innings, 68 strikes on 93 pitches. 62% of those were fastballs, too, so he was really cooking with the heater today, controlling everything all the way throughout. And I think a massive part of this game, you mentioned the George Springer catch in the ninth inning there on the first pitch of the ninth inning.
Man,
what
a catch.
Holy smokes. That catch, first of all, and it wasn't the only one.
No.
The outfield was sensational today, and that was a huge reason why they ended up winning the game. Sometimes pitching on defense is a really good recipe to win games, and it was really refreshing to see this outcome for the Blue Jays today because, you know, when you play like that and you have efforts like George Springer showed you in right field, sometimes you deserve to win the ball game, and they did today.
Like Ben said, an absolute primal scream as he was sitting on the turf. He was jacked up. That's Jesse Rubinoff. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on Sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call, 416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The People's Text Line is always open. Yeah, Kevin Gausman, seven innings of brilliant stuff from him. Five hits, one earned run, which was a home run to Freddie Freeman. It was the only run he allowed and the only run the Dodgers scored all game. No walks, five strikeouts, 93 pitches. Gausman's a good place as any to start, Jesse. And, you know, I thought early on, I mean, he looked great all game, but his fastball velo was kind of all over the place. Like, usually it's pretty steady, I would say, but today we saw it as low as 89. I think he got up to 95, maybe close to 96 at different points. He had a healthy amount of fastballs thrown today, too, like through four innings, right? He had thrown 48 pitches through four, and 35 of those pitches were four-seam fastballs. Yep. So he was throwing it, at that point in the game, he was throwing the four-seam fastball at a 73% rate. By the end of the game, it kind of had ticked back down to 62%. He was throwing the splitter a little more. But it's funny because we've had the conversation about Gausman in the past, especially in the last couple of years, about him throwing more pitches that aren't either the fastball or the splitter, right? Like throwing the sinker or throwing the slider a little bit more. And, yeah, he completely went away from that idea today. Yeah. He threw only four pitches of his 93 pitches that weren't one of those two. He threw three sliders, he threw one sinker, and that's it. Like, he largely today against the Dodgers lived on the diet of fastballs and splitters, and that's worked for him, right? Like, basically his entire Blue Jays career, it's worked. And I think the thing I like the most about it, Jesse, is that he was not afraid to use that fastball to challenge Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani. Freddie Freeman did get the best of him on one swing, but by and large, it was phenomenal stuff from Gausman.
Yeah, it was remarkable, and you talked about the fastball. Maybe he was taking a couple innings there to get revved up, but the control was never really an issue. Zero walks on the day, and first pitch strikes, 19 first pitch strikes out of 26 batters faced. So the control was always there right from jump from Kevin Gausman. And when you're facing a team like the L.A. Dodgers, you need to always be ahead of these batters because you have Mookie Betts, you have Shohei Ohtani, you have Freddie Freeman, really the list goes on. They're all dangerous in this lineup. And if you fall behind these batters, they're going to make you pay. And Kevin Gausman did an outstanding job of staying ahead of them, using the control to his advantage. And, man, this is exactly what you need from the Toronto Blue Jays. You needed the stopper to end the losing streak. And you had some questions, I think, coming into this start. We knew that he had been turning it around in his previous two, but you needed him to keep the train rolling a little bit here for himself, get his confidence level back up. Now his ERA is down to 450 on the year, and you start to see that he's starting to feel himself a little bit more like he did a year ago. And that's, you know, you're looking for positives in this season right now, still under 500 if you're the Toronto Blue Jays. But if you're looking for positives, the fact that your ace is back to being an ace has to be very high up on the list of wins at this point.
That they had actually gotten to this point without Gausman looking like himself, I honestly thought itself was impressive. It's just the offense had not really been holding up its end of the bargain.
Yeah.
And that obviously did not happen again today. I mean, they scored three runs in the bottom of the second inning and then no runs for the rest of the game. So once again, I think it's totally valid to criticize the offense because, again, we saw some big hacks and Bo really scuffling today. Vladdy less so. I mean, Vlad, the biggest spot of criticism for Vladdy today will, of course, be getting picked off at first base. I was sitting up here in between Chris and Ben, and
yeah.
Every single one of us kind of just hung our heads
after
that happened. Yeah,
very audible.
A collective groan. I'm surprised it didn't come through on the broadcast from literally everyone, even in the ballpark.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, man, everyone. You know, everyone here was thinking that exact same thing when that happened. And thankfully, it did not end up factoring in a massive way. And he did have two hits today. In a day where the Blue Jays had eight hits, he had two of them. And they were, you know, the first one was a nice one. He stings into the gap.
Yeah, 112 and, off the bat.
It would look great.
Yep.
Second time up, he did strike out a couple times. But near the end of the game, he gets doubled off on a Bobichet ground into a double play. But he puts one right in the hole into right field, which I really like. But again, You need a little bit more from Vladdy, but Bo, really scuffling right now.
Yeah, I think baby steps. You got to look for positives, especially on a day when they finally snap the losing streak. And Vladdy, you can't have the pickoff, clearly. You cannot have that
yes,
happen
absolutely.
At all.
Yes.
But nonetheless, when a guy who's struggling as badly as Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has been, and he's been a lightning rod, we talked about that in the pregame show, to have two hits in a victory for the Blue Jays, that you got to chalk it up. Is a pretty significant positive for me. And Bo, you wonder how long Bo deserves the benefit of the doubt. And I think we're both probably still willing to look at it and
right.
say, this is a guy whose track record is, you know, he's led the league in hits before. It's a guy who has a very long track record of having success at every single level that he's been at, including the major leagues. And clearly they're going to need to get him going if they're going to have any semblance of success this season. But it is still April, and I think until you officially flip the calendar, I don't think the alarm bells can quite be ringing for Bo Bichette so loudly yet, to the point where he deserves the same level of criticism as some of the other guys who haven't shown it as much as Bo has in his past. It's funny, I thought when they scored early and the way that they scored, they were moving guys over and manufacturing runs. And I thought, this is pretty refreshing to watch, and maybe this is a sign of things to come, and they're scoring early, and maybe they're finally going to score five runs in the game for the first time
in 20 games. I was convinced they were going to break five runs
Me
today,
too.
Especially early on.
Me too.
Convinced.
But nonetheless, here we are, a victory, but it's 20 straight games. 20 straight games scoring less than five runs. That is the longest streak by any Major League Baseball team this year or last. So it's not the most glamorous of streaks. But again, today is not the day to harp on the issues with the offense.
Agreed.
There will be more times where we'll be able to discuss the struggles at the plate, because this team will give you that over the next little while, I'm sure. But today, pitching and defense was the recipe for success.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. Let's go to the text line, Jesse. Let's see what people are saying. I see one here from David in Dartmouth. This win was needed.
Yes.
And not only was it exciting Blue Jays baseball, it was jumping from start to finish. The energy in here was pretty good. The vibes, I will say, at the Rogers Center today was great, and I'm sure a lot of Blue Jays fans feel good about it. I mean, you snap a five-game losing streak. Anytime you snap any kind of losing streak, I'm sure you feel pretty good. But when you can do it against a team like the Dodgers, who can basically at any time erupt for an absurd amount of runs, I think you feel pretty good about it. I see a text here. Let's see, from Edward in, I'm going to say Leduc. Edward, you tell me if that's wrong, in Alberta. But he says, Varsho made the game-saving catch in the eighth. Nothing potential about it. John in Toronto, did Varsho just save John Schneider's job?
No, it's a valid point.
It's a valid question. I really do think that's valid, because I'll say this. I don't know about you, Jesse. I was ready to roast the decision to pull Jimmy Garcia.
Of course.
Garcia.
I think everyone in here was looking around like, I don't know, is this the right move to be making at this time? Like, obviously, we all understand the lefty-lefty matchup.
Yes.
That's why you're bringing in Meza, Max Muncy, a 200-hitter against lefties this season. So it makes a lot of sense from a, again, analytics standpoint. Yeah. But Tim Meza isn't a guy that has thrived in high leverage spots, especially this season, but really over his entire Blue Jays career. So you got to be careful in spots like that, and to bring him in the highest of leverage spot with the bases loaded like that. Like, it was 3 feet away from just an absolute total gong show on Twitter for the next 24 hours. Like, it would have been like the Leafs was last night.
Yeah, it would have been close to apocalyptic.
Yes.
If they had lost this game because Tim Mazza, who I still think he's looked better as of late, has. I think he's turned things around a little bit considering his start to the season, but you know, bases loaded, you bring in Tim Mazza, who for me is still knocking on the door to get back into the inner circle of trust, whereas Jimmy Garcia is like as in the middle of the bullseye of the circle of trust as you can possibly be. And don't get me wrong, did he look a little shaky when he came up today? It was probably the first time in a really high leverage moment you're like, gosh, like what's up with Jimmy Garcia today, right? He walks a guy.
The walk to Austin Barnes was I think, a bit concerning.
Yeah,
and probably
what
John Schneider would have referenced in the post-game scrum. Had Mazza blown it, he would have said, you know, we saw what Jimmy did with Austin Barnes. He lost him there. You can't lose that guy. And we started
the
nine
hitter.
Does he have it?
Yeah, you can't do that to the nine hitter pretty much ever. And you never expect, especially the way he's pitched this year, you don't expect Jimmy Garcia to do that. But they had runners on second and third after the double with no outs and Shohei Ohtani coming to the plate. You're kind of like, okay, here we go. Here we go. It's the top of the order coming to the plate. And Shohei pops up after Jimmy Garcia fastball. I admit it felt a little too on the nose for Teoscar Hernandez to be the one to punish the Blue Jays after all the things we'd seen, because he did it last year when he was at the Mariners. But he strikes out with a foul tip into Kirk's glove, and I admit I kind of wanted to see Jimmy Garcia v Max Muncy, but Mazza got it done. I admit though, I wonder in this stadium, including in this booth, I wonder how many butts were clenched when that ball was in the air. Because you had looked into the outfield, too, and you could see Springer and Varsho kind of converging. You're like, oh, my God. It's not a home run, but are they going to, like, crash into each other? Like, what's going on out there? And then, at least up here, the reaction was that of palpable relief.
It was definitely the one time in the game where you felt it sort of slipping away from the Blue Jays a little bit. And it's funny that you can have the defensive stalwarts that you have in Dalton Varsho and George Springer converging, and because everything that has gone wrong in the last little while, or everything that could go wrong has gone wrong for the Toronto Blue Jays, you're like, hey, these guys are two of the best outfielders in baseball, but they look like they're going to collide, and everyone's freaking out about it and nervous about what's about to happen, and they end up catching it 3 feet from the wall. So it worked out, but definitely a scary moment there, and I think it saved John Schneider from having to answer some pretty tough questions in the post-game scrum,
for sure. I think you're right. I absolutely think you're right. Yeah, Mike from Kingston just texting in to say, I was skeptical about Mazza. It did work out, but I wouldn't have made that move. Schneider's got away with that one. It does.
Is that a working out? Like, if a guy hits it to the warning track 3 feet from being a grand slam.
For an out.
When you brought in your reliever for one guy, I guess it's an out, so yes, technically they got away with it, but it doesn't exactly inspire confidence that I would want to do the exact same thing
again. At the same time, my point is, if the analytics say that bringing in the lefty on lefty matchup is the right thing to do, even with the bases loaded after you intentionally walked Freddie Freeman, and then the result of the play is an out, that is absolutely going to reinforce them doing it again.
And analytically.
Yes.
Analytically.
Right.
But eye test, if a guy almost hits it out, you're like, I don't know, maybe we should go back to the drawing board and see if that's something we'd want to do in the exact same situation again.
I won't lie. It does make me feel like the result was a teensy bit, like there's at least some luck involved there, because Muncy was putting some good swings out there. It wasn't like he was taking hacks at stuff, right? He wasn't exactly like he's a good hitter. On Friday, he punished a pitch for a three-run bomb.
Roped a couple foul balls, too, before that.
Exactly. He got a couple right down the right field line that went just to the maybe, like, what, 10 to 15 feet foul?
Exactly,
if that. So he's a very talented hitter, as we know. But is he in the same conversation as Will Smith and Mookie and Shohei and Freddie Freeman? Maybe not. But, I mean, there's a reason he was batting fifth today or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So, I'm glad it worked out, because I'm glad we don't have to talk about some kind of blown lead for the Toronto Blue Jays. All right, let's go to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Russ joining us from New Jersey. Russ, what's on your mind?
Good afternoon, guys. Well, a great pitched game, but it's all about the offense now. This team is not going anywhere. And some of the like there was that inning where Muncy hit the double, okay, and then they got that play where Goss made the mistake of not, you know, looking right. back and throwing yep. the first. But they come into the dugout, and Bichette and Guerrero swing at the first. There's two pitches, two outs right away. The guy just came off, you know, it was a harder inning. It's just like sometimes some of these guys, you wonder if they have any thought process. When you can't get two outs on two pitches. Then Turner, as the professional that he is, you know, he waited. But if I was the Blue Jays, this lineup is atrocious. There's nothing, you know, you can talk about Guerrero's two hits today. The guy's supposed to be a superstar. He has three homers and 10 RBIs. That's the bottom line. If I was the Blue Jays, and I'm not a big batting order guy, but I would move Turner up to two and put Guerrero four. The Blue Jays are not going anywhere if they don't get a huge year out of Guerrero. I think we all can all agree on that. But Turner takes pitches. He gets and he takes pitches. He works the count. He's going to let the other guy see more pitches. And hopefully Guerrero has guys on base. You know, Turner's hitting over 300. Hopefully that, you know, and Springer starts a little bit, Bichette and Guerrero come up with guys on base. That could, you know, start them. Because this offense, we have scored more than five runs. We haven't scored since the 9-8 Yankees game, six runs or more. It's like once in a while you should have a six run. Not since the 9-8 Yankees game have we scored six runs or more. They're averaging under four runs, you know, a game, way under four runs. It's just, it's very, very hard to watch this offense.
What did you think, Russ, before I let you go, what did you think of Kirk's day?
You know, he hit the ball well. Listen, give him credit. You know, he got a couple hits and, you know, but listen, you go back to Kirk, and I'll say it again and again. You know, people in 2022 decided after a half a season that Alejandro Kirk was Johnny Bench, okay? He was a half – you look from July and on, he's a very average hitting catcher. Now, today he was great, but like you guys said, you scored three runs, and then you just didn't do anything, and you had to have some great pitching – and some great defense to save the game. They need that 6-7-1 game once in a while. I'm not asking for every night, but something's got to go with this offense because this is it's impossible to watch.
Hey, Russ, I appreciate the call, man. Thank you for joining us as usual on Jay's Talk. So, okay, a couple of things there, Jesse, from Russ's call.
Yeah.
I think he brings up a good point about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I mean, you and I were like, oh, great, two hits, great for Vladdy. And look, it's a start for someone who has been really struggling. But Russ is also correct in that he was expected to be a superstar. Look, Blair and Barker have said this a couple times. I'm curious where you fall on this, actually, because the guys have said they're going to, until further notice, essentially, treat him like a good to very good player instead of a generational superstar, essentially, which I think does, and I've started to kind of do the same thing, which I think does somewhat adjust your expectations
yeah.
with what you feel you need from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. But it is a moving of the goalposts to a certain extent, right? Like it does feel like every year since 2021 we have moved the goalposts like a teensy bit every single year to the point where we're like, oh man, two hits from Vladdy, like pretty good, right? So again, I don't want to spend a lot of time harping on the offense a day where they win mainly, but
yeah.
I do think it's a valid point. I do feel like it's worth praising Kirk because, and that's why I asked Russ, because he's had such a tough season. He's had such a really, a subpar season.
Well, he's above the Mendoza line for the first time since the season started.
Yeah, first home run of the season. He bangs a line drive right up the middle the next time up. A sharp liner all the way to the left field wall for a third hit. I think I saw it was the hardest hit ball of his career
at
112.9 miles an hour. Thomas Hall, give him some credit for this. He and I have conversations on the pregame show often, and Thomas brought this up. If you look at his stance, it maybe looks like, and this is maybe a question for Barker, because obviously that's his thing, but it looks like he's been maybe standing a little further away from the plate during a lot of his struggles when you compare it to, like, when Russ brought up his All-Star season, or the first half of that All-Star season, I guess. And he was standing a little closer to the actual plate today, so I mean, I wonder if that's something they identified, or that's something he identified, but he looked a lot better this year. I hope that's something he can build on going forward, because he's had a very inconsistent start to the year, and you need more from guys. I mean, you need more from everyone, but you need more from guys not named Bo and Vladdy and Springer if you want games like this to be won, essentially.
Yeah, no, there's no question. Alejandro Kirk does deserve a lot of credit for his performance today, but it is one day, and he's going to need to string it together for a little bit longer to become a viable threat in this lineup, and they need as many threats as they could possibly have. But I thought there were a lot of really good points made in that call. And Justin Turner, I think part of the reason Blue Jays fans have loved watching him, and it's not just because he's the one guy in the lineup that bats over 300, but his at-bats, there is something different about it. There's a different level of patience. There's a different level of grinding and battling that you haven't seen really from anybody else. And I know John Schneider a couple of days ago was asked on Blair and Barker, like, when do you guys reevaluate what you do in terms of preparation and getting the guys, you know, ready to play the game? And John said, we're not really there yet. Like, it's too early to, I'm watching them. They're working hard. It's just a matter of the results haven't carried over. And it feels like that's sort of the explanation every single year. And the offense hasn't been good for a while now. And they literally invented positions in the clubhouse, in the organization. There's an offensive coordinator. There are never offensive coordinators in baseball. This isn't football. They invented positions. And you would think, hey, maybe there's a different approach coming with the offense, and the results have been the exact same. So when you watch Justin Turner, it is refreshing to see a guy like that. And Bo and Vladdy, at some point, you got to change up what you're doing. He's right. You can't have two at-bats and two pitches and two groundouts. You can't do that. It's not productive in any way, shape, or form. And something like that needs to change because they are one of the lowest-scoring teams in all of Major League Baseball. That is a reality. So the process at some point is going to have to change. Today, a victory. But again, the offense, we end up talking about it because they scored three runs.
I see a text here that says, can we structure a bonus for Bo? Bonus.
Nice.
Writing it out the way you think it's spelled.
Yeah.
Paid if he sees more than one pitch. While I'm sure the CBA would have something to say about that, it's probably not the worst idea I've ever heard. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to Mark calling in from Detroit. Mark, what's up? What's on your mind, man? Welcome to Jays Talk.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I've been a Jays fan. I grew up in Toronto and I've been living here for 25 years. So I get to see the Tigers, too, who are just as brutal. But the hitting aside,
they've been better this year. The Tigers have been better, right?
The Tigers, their hitting is just as bad. Let's put it that way. Okay. The pitching's been really good. But this team is not a playoff team. And it's clear that they're going to be battling around 500. And I don't see any improvement on the hitting. But the only way I see improvement is if they start trading some of the pitching. So I think, I know Kikuchi's up this year. I think Garcia, isn't he a free agent at the end of the year? I mean, at what point did they decide to make some trades? Yeah. And how do they have any confidence that Atkins is the person to do it? I mean, this management's a mess as far as I can see. They got to make a change so that the person that's actually going to be making the deals can get something in that actually brings the talent back.
Hey, Mark, appreciate the call, man. Thanks for joining us. It's not a... I mean, the reason I think it's not an avenue to consider trading pitchers, right, is simply because that is the clear strength of the team. So if you and maybe this is what Mark is advocating for, right, Jesse, in the sense of starting a rebuild, for example. And we got a couple calls about that yesterday. But at the same time, if you're trading, and I know like the adage is trade from a position of strength, for example, right?
But
at the same time, do you really want to be trading one of the only positions of strength you have on the team? It would just, to me, signal that you're okay with kind of giving up on the season. And again, maybe that is what Mark is trying to say, and I know a lot of fans do feel that way. But the only reason I bring that up is because it's not as though you can bring in someone from the minors to just fill Kikuchi's spot, for example. Like Tiedemann, and it's actually a good thing, I don't know if you heard, Tiedemann avoided serious injury. It was some kind of like ulnar nerve inflammation, so it wasn't some, he doesn't need Tommy John or anything, so that's great. I think that was the best possible news you could have gotten from Tiedemann. But I mean, even if that's the case, he's probably not going to even start throwing for quite some time, which means he's probably not going to get back into a minor league rotation for even longer, which means he's not going to actually pitch for the Blue Jays even longer than that, right? So I don't hate the idea of dealing from a position of strength, but it would signal to me that you're giving up on the season. I don't think this front office is ready to do that. Like if you had to guess, if the front office believes they are closer to competing than not competing. You got to think, based on everything we have heard from the front office and everything we have seen in terms of moves made in this organization, it would indicate to me that they believe they can still compete. Whether that's true or not is a different conversation, but they believe that.
I would be stunned that if they're anything outside of over 10 games back in the middle of the summer, that they don't think they're ready to compete. Like,
right.
I really believe that everything points towards them believing that this is another year where they can be competitive. They think it's a similar team,
yeah,
or better in their eyes as the team that made the postseason last year. Didn't win a game, but they made the postseason. I think the expectation in the front office, and it remains this way even though they've had a slow start, the expectation remains to be a playoff team. And I think it would take something significant to kickstart a rebuild right now. I'm not even sure Ross Atkins would be the one to oversee it immediately. I think they would probably want to wait until the offseason and reevaluate things at an organizational level really starting that.
That would mean they miss the playoffs then, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's no, you know what I mean? Like, I think the only way they make the playoffs and it's not Ross Atkins making decisions next year is if they get bounced to two games again in the wild card series.
Yeah, I think it would be the opposite. Like, I think instead of rebuilding, I think that if they're anywhere close, like I said, like within 10 games,
right.
I think there would be a level of desperation to, in fact, try and add and not trade away your pitching to get something else. Like, actually use prospects that you have to try and add and make a run for it. Because I think that they believe they're in the competitive window here. The Bo and Vladdy contracts are running out. You don't have them for very long anymore. You need to figure out, like, hey, we only got a couple years left of this. Otherwise, we're going to be actually forced to rebuild. And you don't want to get into, you know, a Raptor-type situation where they won a championship, but we've seen what's happened with them now. They sort of waited a little bit too long. So I think they're going to want to try and go for it before they start their rebuild in earnest. And whether that's ill-advised or not, it's a good question. Another thing about the trading pitching for something else to make them better. This is what the Blue Jays did in the sense that power and hitting was their strength. They had other weaknesses, including defense. They traded away the power and the hitting for defense, and it hasn't exactly led them to great success. So it's not a one-for-one deal where it guarantees you taking your strengths and trading it away. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to come out, you know, it's all going to come out in the wash. You're going to be just as successful. Sometimes those moves don't work out, and you end up making your team worse.
Would I be completely opposed to seeing them trade Kikuchi if I knew they could replace him adequately with some kind of resource elsewhere? No, I wouldn't be opposed to that, because then I think that's appropriate roster management, right? And Kikuchi, like Mark said, is a free agent at the end of the year, and it seems unlikely based on his representation that he will sign in season, right? And I mean, based on the way he's played in the last couple, like, year plus, I hope he does resign with the Blue Jays. But I mean, because there are not a lot of reinforcements that are imminently coming outside of Tiedemann,
who would pitch?
That's what I'm saying. Like, who would pitch in that spot? I actually have no idea.
No.
I don't know. You'd have to go, like, the coming back the other way would have to be like a serviceable, a serviceable starter. Like, you'd be going back to giving Baden Francis starts or something like that. And he's on the IL right now.
Yeah, there's no question. Like, that's the only real solution. And I can see a scenario where something like that happens. That fifth starter puts up a 5.50 ERA, and fans go, well, we had great pitching. Why did you trade away the great pitching? Like, it's a tough gig, and you have to make tough decisions.
Yeah.
But when you're trading away something that gives it, I mean, pitching and defense give you such a great opportunity. You would think in the playoffs, that's oftentimes been such a great recipe for teams. Hasn't worked out for the Blue Jays, but I believe that's what the front office, that's the reason they built this team the way they did.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. We'll go back to the text line, 590-590, in a sec here. Let's go to the phones. Richard in London with a friend. So we got two people, I guess, here. What's up, Richard?
Long-time listeners. Hey, Rubinoff, we saw with McAuliffe, I believe, on the exit of that other guy.
We got a bona fide TV star here, Richard. It's great.
Right.
Hey, love you. Hey, listen, baseball, though. We were talking about the Bison boys, the Buffalo boys, that actually have been doing some nice stuff for this Toronto team right now. I'm not trying to knock the guys that were here yesterday, but this young group of players that have shown up here have actually done some tremendous things to actually do Toronto proud, I would think.
Okay, Richard, I appreciate the call. Thank you for joining us here on Jays Talk. Yeah, hey, look, you want to point out the great plays from a lot of the guys from Buffalo? I think today, at the very least, that conversation starts with David Schneider. That's for sure.
I mean, he made us look good a little bit because we were talking him up in the pregame show.
That is true.
Get him in the lineup, and you'll see some pop. You'll see a little bit of power, and he hits that double early on.
You wanted to walk as well?
I was, like, puffing my chest out walking around because of that, what we talked about earlier. So I am all aboard the David Schneider train. I have been from the time he came up here and was lights out. I mean, the
guy's you should grow your mustache like him. Yeah, I think you could do it. You could do it.
I actually think I could, but it's a matter of want, not whether I could. But the guy's 25 years old. He was gangbusters when he came up last year. Eight home runs, 20 RBI in 144 at-bats. You got to give him a chance. You got to give him a chance. Stop protecting him from major league pitching. If he's ever going to be a really good major leaguer, which you saw flashes of it last year, he's going to need to be in the lineup. And you got to let him get hot. So let him get hot like he did a year ago. Yeah. Let the boy play. Let him play.
Yeah, he was batting fifth today. And like I've generally said this, I think it does matter to a certain extent. I'm like Russ. I'm not exactly like the biggest batting order is the be-all, end-all for everything. But if he's batting in that fifth, sixth spot, you kind of flip-flopping him in with Varsho, depending on how they're hitting, I think that's probably the right place. But, yeah, look, the double was great. He walked as well. He actually scored a run, I think, on a great read from third base. And Muncy didn't really have a great decision to make there because the ball went right up the third base line.
Yeah.
And Muncy had to, and it was a dribbler too. It wasn't like a rocket to third base. So Muncy had to come in to get it. There was a point where it kind of looked like, at least from our vantage point, it almost looked like Schneider and Muncy were running almost side by side as Schneider was going to the plate. And I honestly thought Muncy was going to try and flip the ball to Barnes at the plate. And he clearly had to make a split second decision and chose first base and let the run come in to score anyways. But, look, in that sixth inning, ugly AB from Schneider. Like, you see the good and the bad from him.
Bad. Yeah, that's a very fair point.
But I still think you're right. It feels like the highs largely have outweighed the lows. So I'm with you. I think he's got to play more.
Well, it also comes down to what you need.
Yeah, yeah.
And how many calls are we going to take where it's the offense is the problem, you got to switch something up. And when you have a guy who has the potential, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to come to fruition, but a guy who has the potential to add some juice to your lineup, what it does is it means you don't have to go out and trade a Yusei Kikuchi in order to supplement. The guy's right here.
Yeah.
He's, instead of sitting him on the bench, put him in the lineup and see what he's actually made of. Unless you give these guys an opportunity to play, you're not truly going to understand what you have, and you're going to keep running out an offense that isn't getting the job done. So, I mean, this is another way to look at it. How much worse can it get? They haven't scored 5 runs in 20 games.
Right.
So how much worse can it get?
No, that's fair. That's a fair question.
Just play guys who give you the best opportunity to actually put some crooked numbers on the board. And I think David Schneider is one of those guys that provides that opportunity.
That is Jesse Rubinoff. I'm Sho Adley. You're listening to Jays Talk. Jays Talk and Blue Jays baseball brought to you, of course, by Crown Rust Protection. The Blue Jays with a 3-1 win over the Dodgers to break the losing streak. We're going to step aside when we come back. We'll go back to the phones, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. 590-590, name and location. See a lot of great texts here. We will get to those straight ahead. You're listening to Jays Talk, Sho and Jesse on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Not going to repeat what I said off the bat. Glad I'm not wearing a Whoop bracelet, monitoring your heart rate. That was that. And I think when you're looking at their lineup, you know, Jimmy's going back-to-back days. It was a little bit of a stressful inning. And love Teo to death, but I'll take Jimmy versus Teo as opposed to Freddie, you know. So I think knowing where Timmy is, too, with how he's throwing the ball, you like that. They hadn't pinch hit for Max all year. I was maybe looking for Will Smith there. I was kind of taking a gamble. But I think you look at their lineup and, you know, the top three, you know, if you have a chance to let somebody else beat you, you're going to take it.
That is John Schneider discussing the Jimmy Garcia-Tim Meza decision. You know what? I think genuinely that is the first time I have ever heard John Schneider admit that he took a gamble. I honestly, like, I think that's the first time I've ever heard him actually say that.
I saw
that
you nodding
word.
Your head.
Like, because usually it's just like, yeah, that's a decision that worked out for us. It was great. That was exactly like we planned it, right? Like, just like we drew it up. And he actually admitted that they took it was a gamble today because it was. Mm-hmm. It was a gamble, but it's a gamble that worked out for the Blue Jays. Tim Mayza gets Max Muncy to fly out. The Blue Jays preserve, along with a Springer catch, off of what would have been probably a double at that point. But the Blue Jays grab a 3-1 win and snap the 5-game losing streak. Welcome back to Jays Talk. Show Adley, Jesse Rubinoff here with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Still some time to give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Or if you want to give us a text as well, 590-590, name and location. I wanted to read kind of a trio of texts for you here,
sure,
Jesse.
Let's do it.
I think these are interesting ones. Let's see here. I'm just going to find them again. One is, okay, here it is. Ty in Beaumont, love the show. Quick question. Vogelbach, does he actually add value to the current roster? Could the Jays not use another arm in the pen? I see a text here from Claudio in King City. Similar, they're all kind of related, right? How long can we keep Vogelbach on the roster? He's not hitting well, can't feel the position. Are we not better off using that roster spot to rotate some of the young guns from Buffalo to see what they got? Any update on Joey Votto? I do have an update on that from Ben Nicholson Smith. And Alex from Toronto says, I've been asking for weeks, but only recently heard it mentioned over the last couple of days. Why not move Vogelbach for Aurelvis Martinez? Even have him just as a DH if needed for a bit. Can't make much difference in having Vogelbach used so sparingly. And then, yeah, he says, I would have left Jimmy Garcia in for to face the guys instead of Mayza pulling it off.
Yeah.
But still, okay. First, the Joey Votto thing, really quickly, just because that was a quick update. BNS had joined me during that just redonkulous rain delay on Thursday. And first of all, very, very much grateful for him for joining me in what ended up being almost a four-hour rain delay. So I very much appreciate that from BNS. But I asked him, and BNS said he has still not resumed live hitting. He's only recently started running. So it does not sound like he is anywhere close to coming to the major league roster, because it doesn't really sound like he's that close to going to the minor league roster, much less the major league roster. So, you know, that bat he stepped on, which that must have been a much worse ankle sprain than we had heard when he stepped on that bat after the home run in spring training. But that's where Joey Votto was at. On Vogelbach being moved, I do think, and we saw this in the last couple of games where there was a point, Jesse, where he was not used in a pinch hitting situation, and then he was already in the game the next time out, and then he was not pinch hit four in that situation, and then to the texture's points, he just does not play all that often, generally speaking. I kind of agree. The problem is, it does feel like Vogelbach's spot is being held for Votto, but I mean, as someone who would like to see Aurelvis Martinez play sooner rather than later. Positional logjam, his defense be damned, even if you just bring him up, maybe the only argument I could see otherwise is if he's not going to play because of those two things, defense and positional logjam, maybe the Blue Jays feel it's better just to have him play games in the minors and continue to work on whatever he's got to work on. If they already know he's not going to play, because you'd kind of have to move off of one of, you know, IKF, Schneider, Biggio, or Clement to get him a spot, essentially. Like, not to clear him on a spot for the 40-man, but just to have him play. It means one of those other guys has to play a little bit less, because Vogelbach, at least right now, is not taking time away from any of those guys, essentially.
Or you move those guys somewhere where they're not comfortable.
Yes, right.
Maybe like an absent Barger in left field type situation, which the Blue Jays have proven they're not necessarily afraid to do. So if that situation necessitates, they likely will do that. And it feels like Vogelbach is just kind of keeping the seat warm for either Votto or Aurelvis Martinez. I think you start to question when you look at the numbers that Martinez has in the minors and the heater that he's on right now. It's like, well, how much is he going to have to do before he finally gets the call? But it is just April still, and you start to wonder, you know, middle of May comes around, beginning of June, if Aurelvis is still as hot as he's been or some semblance of that, then likely he's going to be up, because he's going to give this team a better chance to win. And he's been down there for a while now. So he didn't have, you know, not a great year by his standards last year, but it feels like he's turning things around. And Vogelbach, for the time being, yeah, 18 at-bats. He's appeared in 10 games. His average, obviously, is not great. He's got 2 hits on the year, but he does have 5 walks. And it's not like he's going up there and it's, you know, a complete lost cause. Like, his OBP is over 300. So he does have a pretty decent eye, and he's giving you base runners, which is something that the Blue Jays need. So it's not like the worst thing in the world until Aurelvis proves that he's truly ready, yeah, or you have another option like a Joey Votto ready to go.
It just, again, it just doesn't really feel like, it doesn't feel like Votto is that close.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I just would have preferred had they just signed like Tommy Pham to a deal or something like that, right? Like, or I mean, I don't know. I think it's to say if you're gonna like DFA Vogelbach and bring back like Brandon Belt or something, it does kind of feel like six of one, half a dozen of the other a little bit. And I think a big part of the reason why Belt didn't get brought back, certainly age, I'm sure, is a big part of it, but also money, which is also why he's not an option now, I think, right? Because you'd have, as a veteran, you'd almost, and this is the case for Vogelbach, why Vogelbach I think was a little more attractive, because they only had to pay him like $2 million or whatever it was, so yeah, it wasn't exactly very expensive. But if you do pay Brandon Belt, you'd probably have to pay him IKF money, essentially. You'd have to pay him like $30 million, probably. And that's also probably a big reason why Brandon Belt's not on a major league team right now, unless I missed something. I think he's still free.
Yeah, he is. But, yeah, you just wonder, like, what purpose is Vogelbach serving if he's only got 18 at-bats to this point and he's, you know, not showing that he's going to command more regular playing time because of the way that he's performing? You just start to wonder, you know, what's the purpose of having him on the roster at all? Are there other guys that can step in that spot and give you better at bats, more on base, give you more RBI potential? Because Vogelbach's not necessarily getting it done right now.
We heard from John Schneider on the Jimmy Garcia, Tim Meza decision. Let's hear from Schneider on that Springer game-saving catch, which was certainly a wild one. Here's the skipper.
Unreal. I mean, we have the best outfield defense in baseball. I believe that. Changed the game, obviously. You know, Varsh, you know, early against Ohtani in center too. But yeah, that was about as good as it gets there with George.
That is, again, John Schneider talking about the Springer catch, which, again, I loved seeing Springer, after he makes the catch, diving full extension, glove first, snatches the ball out of the air, and then lands on his butt and is just screaming into the general air as the crowd goes crazy. You know, slaps Varsho for a very aggressive, excited high five. I thought it was great stuff from George Springer, and I thought Ben had a great call, by the way, of it as well. That was the play of the game.
Excellent call.
I think he did a great job of that. But, man, that was great stuff. I see a text here on Springer from Ben and John Calder driving from PEI to Halifax. I have no idea how long that drive is. I don't know if you've ever done that drive.
No.
I have not, but hey, appreciate you guys listening. They say, love the show. Springer seems to be more of a benefit for his defense than intangibles than his bat. You could also put Kiermaier and IKF in that category. Jays can't score runs with this emphasis on defense. Back to the drawing board this offseason. They have another question about Manoah, which we'll get to in a second here. It's definitely true that, it's the same conversations we were having last year, right? It's the same thing. I think I said this to you on the pregame show, and I'm curious what you think, if it's changed at all for you, Jesse, in the last couple of weeks. But for me, I admit, like, you still want offensive production from George Springer. Like, you you need that, especially from your leadoff, your leadoff batter.
Yeah.
But I admit, like, maybe it's just me, but my expectations for Springer offensively have decreased a little bit in a way that they haven't for Bo and for Vladdy. And I mean that they're starting to for Bo and for Vladdy because of the way they've been swinging the bat lately. But for Springer, I don't know, maybe I just have decreased expectations because the truth is he's just older.
It's his age, yeah.
And you did hope, obviously, that this part of his production, like him looking like this, would have come a little bit later in this giant, huge dollar figure deal that he'd been given several years ago. Like, he'd hope it would come a teensy bit later down the road. But, I mean, here we are, right? It's kind of like the same. I feel like it's the same conversation we had about, like, John Tavares and the Toronto Maple Leafs, right, for, like, however many years now. But,
yeah.
But you are still getting plus value from Springer defensively, as you saw today, certainly. So that buoys it a little bit. But you still want a little bit more from the offense.
Yeah, it's so interesting because when I saw him make the catch today, I thought, we talked about in the pregame show about maybe he's dropping off in athleticism and hand-eye and the things that are required to be really good at the plate. And then he goes out and does that. And that's one of the better catches you'll ever see, frankly, right? And Chris LaRue said it was the best catch he's ever seen George Springer make. And the guy's 34 years old, and he still has that defensively.
Yeah.
Like, the athleticism is still there. Clearly, if you're making a catch like that, the hand-eye is still there. And I totally understand that defense and fielding and being at the plate and looking at a 100-mile-an-hour fastball or a 90-mile-an-hour slider in the eye. Those are different things.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do think that it exhibits, when he makes a grab like that, the athleticism is still there. He still has something in him. And it shifted me a little bit more to think, hey, maybe he's just cold to start the season instead of a crazy drop-off because he's 34 years old. I was encouraged. I know that defense and offense are different, but what I was looking for was athleticism out of Springer, and we got it with that play, and hopefully it can translate on the offensive side.
I see one more text here from Ben and John saying, where do you think a healthy Manoah fits into this roster? Does he bump Weyrod from the starting rotation? I don't think so.
He just doesn't.
I don't think he can.
You don't need to see the results.
I believe his first rehab start was on April 7th, and that opens a 30-day window.
Yeah.
So that essentially means it's April 28th today. May 7th is next Tuesday. So not this coming Tuesday, but next Tuesday. So we're basically about, 10, 11 days-ish, maybe thereabouts, from them having to make a decision. But I bet, Jesse, he's going to be a Bison for a little while. Because he has options, right? He has options. You can send him down. And that's why you see Manoah with the ball club in the majors until they make that decision. Because technically, he's not a Bison right now. He's just he's a Blue Jay on a rehab assignment.
Exactly.
Which is why you see him back with the big league club in between his rehab starts. But I can't think that anything's going to change between now and May 7th. So again, just a handful of days away. I can't imagine things are going to change to the point where he is going to be a Blue Jay after this 30-day window closes.
No, there's no question. You need to see more consistent performance from him at the minor league level. And he's struggled considerably in his last start, 6 earned runs. You can't have starts like that at the AAA level and just kind of hold your nose and bring him back to the majors and say, best of luck, we'll let you pitch against Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani. That's not the way it works. So you're going to need to see at least 2 excellent starts from Alek Manoah with Buffalo, and I would say probably even more than that, because
that would take you to the end of May, essentially.
Because it's been so long since we've seen the dominant Alek Manoah of a couple of years ago. And until you start to see that guy on a more consistent basis, he's not going to be a part of this team.
I do hope he pulls it together. Honestly, I do. I am rooting for the guy because he was a Cy Young talent, but I hope we see him sooner rather than later, but I do hope he gets to work on it down in Buffalo. You are a Hall of Fame-level talent.
No, you.
I appreciate you coming in here with me. Thanks for doing this, Jesse.
This was so much fun, man. Pleasure to be out here with you.
That is Jesse Rubinoff. I'm Sho Ali. Appreciate you all being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by your local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Campbellton and Bathurst, New Brunswick. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Your local family-owned Crown at crown.com. Canada's number one rust protection. For Jesse, for Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, Andrew Adams, and Stephen Coyle, I'm Sho Ali. Blair and Barker in all week. They have you covered for the Royals series starting tomorrow and game one against the Nationals on Friday. I am back next weekend. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll talk to you later.